All right, TNT, it's time to switch hours. Mr. White is already here for Agribusiness Innovations. And I guess, what shall we talk about today?
We are going to be speaking about breadfruit.
Breadfruit?
Breadfruit.
Hmm. And you know, it used to be in abundance long time, and it's becoming scarce.
And expensive.
And expensive. All right, TNT, so stay tuned for that. We will be right back.
To Betterments with Old Space, Monday through Thursday, 12 p.m. to 3 p.m. for a program that educates and is solution-based. Space tackles the issues that matter to you, providing a platform to speak your mind and find solutions. That's Betterments with Base, with a focus on education and resolution. This is all about making things better for you. You can reach us via phone and WhatsApp to share your thoughts and find solutions to the issues that matter to you. So if you want to make a difference and have your voice heard, tune into Freedom 106.5 FM and join us for Betterments with Base, Monday through Thursday from 12 p.m. to 3 p.m. Better for you, only on Freedom 106.5 FM, where we believe that your voice matters.
Where do future skills begin? Right here at Costat's Open Day. Join them on Saturday, July 26th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the City Campus, Port of Spain. Take a campus tour, meet students and alumni, explore financing, and even attend a live lecture. New applicants get same-day admission approval. Don't miss your chance to jumpstart your career. Register now at costat.edu.tt. Costat, your future skills start here.
This is Freedom 106.5 FM, 106.5 FM, your solution for current affairs and talk. Join the conversation today as we build a better nation. Insightful discussions and interviews on national progress, the latest developments in environmental, social, and governance, plus corporate social responsibility. Freedom 106.5 FM gives you a voice. Freedom to inspire. Freedom to change. Speak your mind with Freedom 106.5 FM.
And now we step into Agribusiness Innovations live on Freedom 106.5 FM. Good morning to you, Jody.
Good morning, Tosca, Trinidad and Tobago. Good morning. Welcome to Agribusiness Innovation. We are live on Freedom 106.5 FM, broadcasting Trinidad and Tobago, and of course, online throughout the world on the Freedom 106.5 FM's website. Today's show, breadfruit. Who? The Trees That Feed Foundation. Mike and Mary Loughlin, thank you for joining us.
I'm sorry, you can check your mic. Your mic is muted. We're not quite hearing you on this side.
There. Thank you.
Ay, ay, ay. So thank you so much. Now, I had a post on LinkedIn this week. It was about breadfruit, and I think Mary and Mike may have both responded to it, and I saw what the foundation does. I was intrigued, so I decided to invite you guys on. So I appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you very much. It was me. I noticed you'd said something on LinkedIn, and I thought I had to respond just to clarify and to expand.
So I would like to read the About Us page on the Trees That Feed Foundation website, which is treesthatfeed.org. Trees That Feed is the story of an artist who wanted to do more. How did this all start? One morning, Mary McLaughlin sipped on her morning coffee and reflected. It's time to do more to help others. Mary wanted to do more to help those in need of nutrition and a better environment. She had been concerned about the environment long before most people. Planting fruit trees kills two birds with one stone. More like three birds. A fruit tree feeds people, creates jobs, and benefits the environment as well. Working with her husband Mike and brother Paul Virtue, Trees That Feed Foundation was established in 2008. Operations commenced in earnest 2009. Our location in Winnetka, Illinois, now serves as operational headquarters for the Caribbean, Central America, and Africa. To date, we've provided over 350,000 fruit trees of many types, including breadfruit, to farmers and others in more than 20 countries. Our mission is planting fruit-bearing trees to feed people, create jobs, and benefit the environment. Trees That Feed Foundation believes that tree crops are a large part of the answer to world food concerns. Tree crops are nutritious, yet require less input of labor, agrochemicals, fertilizers, and space than field crops. Trees also restore ecological balance to land damaged by misuse or neglect, capture and sequester carbon dioxide from the atmosphere, and create habitats for small animals and birds. Planting a tree is a winning bet all around for decades to come. So that's quite a lot. So, Mary, I want to know the start of this. I mean, what made you decide that the move to do this was the right thing?
Well, I grew up on a farm in Jamaica, and my father had a farm that was just nothing but fruit trees. And I would drive along and I would see sugarcane in the fields, and I would think, this is hard work, backbreaking work. I would see people planting cassava and in the hot sun. And then I would go to my father's farm, and it would be shaded, it would be cool. He made money from the farm. And I would see a lot of birds singing, hear a lot of birds singing. And to me, this was logical. And I thought, as I retired, I thought, I could do this. Nobody else seems to be doing, or not many people are doing this, so let me do this. I have the energy. I was retired, still had energy. I could get this done. So that's how I started. That was what drove me. And because I'm Jamaican, I happen to live in the States, but I went back to Jamaica and spoke to the Ministry of Agriculture about this, and they thought it was a good idea. So that's how I started.
Yes, so, you know, you and I have similar backgrounds. My grandfather had a farm in Jamaica, actually. I've never been on it because I wasn't born when it existed, but I was told stories of him having trees and animals on it. So it's quite interesting. So tell me something. When you had this idea and you told Mike about it, how did he respond?
Well, Mike was still working at Deloitte, very intense job, and he said, I will back you. So what I did was I had a business, I sold that business, put that money into starting the foundation, because, you know, you can't start a foundation with nothing. So that money went into the business, and Mike was fully behind that. He backed my dream. In fact, when I first started to explore, I thought, I need to become an expert on breadfruit, because I knew breadfruit was going to be the flagship tree. It's really the only fruit that can fill your belly and do so much more. So he said, I think you should go to the world's leading expert in Hawaii who has studied breadfruit for many years. Get on a plane, go there, learn as much as you can, and then let's come back and do this properly. Let's do it systematically and let it grow gradually. So that was how we first started. And Mike fully backed me.
And this is Mike just jumping in for a quick second.
Of course.
What we decided to do is to start in an organized way. So we formed a company and we got tax exemption from the United States government so that we could get funding from other people, not just ourselves, so that we could do kind of bigger and better. So that was part of my contribution. Mary is the genius and the visionary, and we needed the company formed so that we could do it in an organized and efficient way.
So, Mike, did you also go to Hawaii to learn about breadfruit as well?
I've been to Hawaii many times. In my working career, I consulted with insurance companies, so I've been a consultant to most of the insurance companies in Hawaii. We also vacation there in our spare time, and we saw that they have a lot of breadfruit. They call it ulu. But I'm from Jamaica too. And so although I grew up as a city boy, you know, back then, breadfruit, when breadfruit was in season, we would have breadfruit with every meal. Also, lots of people had a breadfruit tree in their backyard, or they knew where to find a breadfruit tree, which is a good thing, but it's kind of interesting. When we started and we said to people, we want to plant a lot of breadfruit trees, their reaction was, oh, you don't need to do that. We already have lots of breadfruit. It's kind of so much you can't even eat it all. And we said, yes, but we need much more food. We need food year round. How are we going to do that? So we got, I think, well organized.
But to answer your question, Mike didn't go on that trip. I went solo. He stayed behind to on his job, and I went to the Breadfruit Institute in Hawaii to learn.
You know what? Breadfruit is such a powerful fruit for nutrition, but I find here in Trinidad, the use is very, very, very limited. For the most part, most people simply eat it as what we call oil down, which is we just cook it down in coconut milk. And my mother, being Jamaican, would have taught me the number of ways that she may use it, slice it, fry it, roast it. And it is not something that I think all the territories do. So how then have people reacted when you said, listen, breadfruit is the answer to this thing? You think people understand the diverse uses of it?
Well, I think at first they did not. And this is where our foundation really puts a lot of effort. We know, and I'm from Jamaica, we only eat breadfruit three ways. We don't even do oil down. We roast it, we fry it, or we boil it. And sometimes when something is so common and you're so familiar with, you stop being innovative. And sometimes it takes somebody with different eyes or looking at it in a different way to show the innovation. And we know the biggest issue with breadfruit is the bearing season. It bears all at once, and really you can't even eat it. So we knew we had to think of ways to preserve it. And you can preserve by refrigeration, which is very energy intensive, or you can preserve by drying it using solar energy and then grinding it into flour. And this is a big push for our foundation. We encourage people all over the world to use the sun. And Michael has developed a solar dehydrator. And we use that solar dehydrator to dry the breadfruit and grind it into flour. And then you go from a fruit with a fairly short shelf life to a dried flour that can replace a lot of imported flour, and it's gluten-free, and it can be versatile. And you can take common things that you use in your culture that to eat and just replace breadfruit flour. You may not replace it with 100%, but imagine if all of the Caribbean and Africa replaces the wheat flour that they import with just 10% breadfruit flour. Imagine the economic impact that would have downstream.
I'm intrigued about this dehydrator, and it's more personal than anything, because I had... you and I have never spoken before, but I have a cassava flour factory, and I actually had to build a commercial, almost industrial scale dryer once. Built it from the ground up. Mike, did you have any background in building these dehydrators, and how did you learn about it?
Good question. My degree is a physics degree, so I have a science background, and I still love science, even though my work as a professional was on the financial side. But I still love science, and so I got a good education from high school through university and stayed interested in the physical sciences. I recognized from a presentation that was done by a Chinese professor, the Asians are very experienced at drying food. They've been doing it for millennia. So we kind of studied what they had done, modified the design, and came up with what has proved to be a very, very effective design. It's a medium capacity. If you're building a huge factory, you know, you may need electric or gas, propane drying. But for the entrepreneurs that we're working with, this is an ideal solution. So I took the elements of the Chinese design. I worked with Northwestern University that's here in Chicago, in the Chicago area, with their engineering school, and then came up with a modification that would allow this unit to be built using materials available in local countries. So it's not high tech, it's not super expensive, it doesn't use exotic materials. It uses galvanized sheet metal and acrylic plastic and basic low technology ingredients. And so we have a lot of details on the website, but briefly, it collects solar heat, does not convert it to electricity, funnels that hot air into a cabinet. The air goes up through the cabinet. The food is spread out on trays in the cabinet, and that warm air, hot air, progresses up through the cabinet and out, and it absorbs the moisture from the food. It could be breadfruit, it could be cassava, it could be herbs, it could be meat, it could be fish, it could be mangoes. You can dehydrate almost anything, and it's a very good way of preserving. You remove the free moisture in the food product. You're not disrupting the cell structure. You're not cooking it. You're just removing free moisture. When that free moisture is gone or nearly all gone, there is no possibility of mold formation. And so that's why you have this very long shelf life. The dried fruit, you can grind that into flour. The flour is a very versatile ingredient. And as Mary said, it has a very long shelf life. The design is so successful. We're working with the United Nations, actually in Haiti, and they're taking the design and they're building 50 in various communities in Southwest Haiti. We've already built about 30 of these units or worked with people building them. And we get pretty high praise for the efficiency.
I am actually seeing a couple pictures of it, and I understand exactly what you did, and I see the modifications, and it's actually quite simple and quite brilliant, I would say. To the listeners who are wondering, it's on the Trees That Feed website. If you Google Trees That Feed and Dehydrator, you will see what their installations look like. I believe I'm seeing one here in Haiti.
That's correct. One quick story. The very first one that we built was in Jamaica. That's where we started. Of course, we've expanded. We're now in about 24 countries, including Trinidad and Tobago, by the way. So, but when we built that first one, we had it delivered. We were back in Chicago, and we called the farmer that we had donated this tree to. His name was Mr. Glover. So we called Mr. Glover, and we said, "Mr. Glover, how is your solar dehydrator working?" And he's a Jamaican fellow, Jamaican farmer. He says, "Mr. Mike, it's working great, sir, but I don't see where you plugged it in." He thought it was using electricity because it got so hot and was so efficient. He couldn't believe that it was just solar energy which falls on the earth for free.
You know, one of the things that I saw that you did is that bottom, what I would colloquially say a sled that collects the heat to transfer it. I see you've added more than one, and most of the original designs have just one. You've added two, and some I see three. So that's quite brilliant, actually. You've doubled the amount of heat that you can get off of one unit.
And triple. And then the cabinet itself is painted black so that each of those little wings, we call them a solar collector. The triple effect was actually an idea that came from Northwestern University Engineering School. And I modified it a little bit, but you know, this is the benefit of working as part of a team. You know, you can't have all the bright ideas yourself, you work with other people. But each solar dehydrator, what you're seeing there, can collect about 6 kilowatts of energy just from the sun. So that's like if you have a hair dryer and you turn it on to maximum, and you have 4 or 5 of those, that's how much heat you're getting from the sun That's electricity you don't have to pay for. That's propane gas that you don't have to pay for.
You know what? I was in, I want to say maybe Antigua, and I saw one of the agro-processors there from a woman's group trying to build a dehydrator similar to this, and her design was a lot more simple, but it was unsuccessful. She pretty much had what looked like an empty chest freezer with just a clear piece of plexi on the top and some little shelves inside. So I mean, I could understand where these designs definitely would come in handy around the region or around the world.
It's very efficient. It's a little bit expensive. Trees that feed, provided we have the funding, we either pay for the solar dehydrator or we subsidize it. If we, you know, if funding does not permit, then we give advice. And sometimes the person can fund it themselves or work with another group to fund it. But the beauty, part of the beauty, is that once you have that installed, there's no more ongoing cost. You're getting help from Mother Nature for free.
Mary, I want to ask, for our listeners who underestimate the nutritional and financial powerhouse that breadfruit can be, could you get into that a little bit for us?
Yes. And I want to encourage everybody to go to our website. And I just want to jump back a little bit at the solar dehydrator. We have an animation. So if you go to YouTube and look for solar dehydrator, you will see that animation. And the animation really explains how well that works. So I encourage everybody to go to Trees That Feed, go to where it says our videos. That takes you to YouTube and you will see that animation. It's excellent. A volunteer did it for us and we're grateful. And it's very explicit in explanation. But going back to the nutrition, your question, again, all of that nutritional information is housed on our website, as is every academic paper on breadfruit. So that's what we try to do. We are almost a library of knowledge for breadfruit. But breadfruit is not as nutritious as cassava, but it has many other nutritional attributes. It's rich in magnesium, it's rich in vitamin C, it's rich in complex amino acids. And it's very, very rich in fiber. And we know how important fiber is for our health, especially our gut bacteria. Breadfruit is also good for in its glycemic index. It digests very, very slowly. So this is a good food for somebody who suffers from diabetes. And for people that are food insecure, you eat breadfruit and it will stay and it digests so slowly it keeps you full all day. Plus, it's very nutritious in all of its complexity. Some breadfruit trees are richer in protein than other breadfruit trees. So we try to plant different ones in each country that will give you the mix. So I think that was your question. Did I forget a part of it?
No, that was excellent. What I want to find out is how susceptible are breadfruit trees to things like viruses and other things? Is it resilient?
Well, let me answer this and then Mike will jump in. We encourage planting trees in backyards and in what we call agroforest. So that's a mixed forest or a mixed fruit farm, a breadfruit, a pear, a mango, things like that. When they are planted like this, diseases never seem to happen. And that's because you have this perfect balance of the ecosystem. You have the right bugs, you have the right nutrition, and you don't have diseases. I personally discourage people who want to plant vast acreages of breadfruit. That's like planting sugarcane all over again in the Caribbean. That's something I feel strongly about not doing. We've seen farmers who have done patchworks, you know, 25 trees over here, and then maybe peppers and other crops, and then some more, a cluster of breadfruit trees, kind of checkerboard. That's good too for biodiversity. So that's something we like, efficiency in harvesting. But we worry that if people, right now, there are no known major diseases affecting breadfruit trees. We don't want farming practices in monocultures to encourage that. It's just like if a human being ate nothing but bread all day, that would encourage disease. So that's a simple answer for you.
No, there are some stats that I've heard about breadfruits I want to ask you about. One is that a breadfruit tree can feed a family of five for at least 50 years.
And I think that is so. But you don't want to eat nothing but breadfruit. But if you had to, you think of it. One breadfruit tree, and I don't know if Mike wants to jump in here, but one breadfruit tree will give you 200 to 300 fruit per year. If you turn that into flour, each fruit would give you about a pound of flour. Now, if you had 400 pounds of flour in a year, that could feed you. So that's how we have extrapolated it. But if you were to preserve some, eat some in season, mix it up with your oil down or you roast, then a family could survive on one tree. Now, I know Mike wants to jump in here, so I'll give him a chance.
Yeah, I think Mary answered it well. We have actually done yield studies. So we did a 2-year-long study with using 50 breadfruit trees in Jamaica. This was a few years back. And we have good statistics on the seasonality of the fruit, which was, you know, is bunched at certain parts of the year, and the number of fruit that can be yielded. We found that trees that get a bit of organic fertilizer, not chemical fertilizer, but banana peels and, you know, kitchen scraps and so on, can yield 300 fruit per year. We had one tree in the study that yielded over 400 fruit in 1 year. So you extrapolate that if you have, you know, if we've planted 350,000, 400,000 trees, and you're getting 200 to 300 fruit from each tree, and we've been doing this for several years, when you add that all up, we believe that we have supplied over 300 million meals to people in the countries that we operate. So a tree, the breadfruit is nutritious, and the tree is long-lasting and abundant in yield. And you asked the question earlier, it's also resistant to pests, diseases, fungi, and in fact, a byproduct of the male inflorescence of the breadfruit tree can be used to make a natural insect repellent. So this is a robust tree. They live a very long time. We were not sure how long a breadfruit tree could live, but we identified a few trees in Uganda that we know from historical records are over 100 years old. And one of the trees in Uganda is bearing 400 to 500 fruit per year at age 100 plus. So, I mean, this is a good tree and it's bearing a good fruit.
You know, are there any varieties, maybe dwarf varieties of breadfruit trees that take up a little less space?
Yes, there is one called the Maafala. And the Maafala was actually brought to Trinidad by Dr. Laura Nkrumah. She brought some of those and she has a test plot where she has them there. So the Maafala is a smaller tree. It produces a smaller fruit. The traditional breadfruit trees that were brought to the Caribbean in the 1700s were from Tahiti. Those are larger trees. So when you see those big giant trees, those are the larger ones, usually the yellow variety and a white variety. The Maafala is a shorter tree. It's hopefully it won't grow taller than 35 feet, but it's very prolific in its production. The production, I heard from a farmer in Jamaica yesterday, and he said he gets 8 months of production. Now, the fruit is small, and we know Caribbean people think bigger is better. Not always so. If you can have family sizes are smaller now, so you can do with a smaller breadfruit. It's extremely tasty, very fluffy, very yellow, and that's the one that's rich in protein. So that variety is called Maafala, and it's from the island of Samoa.
That's quite
the other thing that we would just quickly, briefly mention is that the other varieties that grow very large, we recommend that the farmer or the individual prune the trees If you don't prune them, they're going to grow 60, 70, 80 feet tall. Lots of beautiful fruit on this tree, but you can't reach it. And so there's a lot of waste. And so a tree that's pruned back will put more energy into the fruit. You'll get more fruit, easily accessible, maybe almost the same yield or maybe the same yield as if you had the tree at its full size, but now you can reach the fruit.
Yeah, because where I have my farm, there is a breadfruit tree that has never been trimmed, and I would say that thing has to be at least 70 feet tall. I don't know how people climb it to get the fruit, but it's quite interesting to see that size.
And that's dangerous to have to send somebody up there to climb. And the interesting thing to know about breadfruit is breadfruit grows on new growth. So you have all the old growth up there. That's not really helping you. If farmers would be disciplined, and after each harvest they prune their tree, then they can get consistent good fruit. But it's hard to be disciplined. It's hard to, the day you pick your last fruit, then everybody get a little lazy. But that's when you have to go to work and prune the tree. Mike and I were in Jamaica once, and we visited a friend's house, and they had just pruned their tree. And they pruned that tree so severely, we almost wanted to weep. But you know what? The next year we went back, that tree was full of fruit. So we want to encourage people, start to prune your trees. Even if you prune severely, if you have one of those 70-foot trees, you prune that severely. And you see what happens. I'm going to prove you right. So encourage everybody to do that. That's so important. That's addressing food security right there, because you have more fruit as you can pick.
Whenever somebody tells me to prune a tree, I get so scared, because I'm thinking, okay, if I prune this, does it mean I'm going to get less fruit? Even though they say, yes, I'm an expert, it's not going to grow back on this branch, especially things like tomatoes. I always have this fear, oh Lord, suppose it was going to bear on this branch. But I mean, you are the expert, so I fully agree with that.
A big part of what we do is education. And we don't claim to be experts by agronomy training, but we have learned an awful lot from the people that we work with who are experts. We saw an agricultural officer in Jamaica pruning a tree, and I was shocked at how heavily it was pruned. And we saw this other tree that Mary mentioned, heavily pruned, and within a year the tree had fully recovered and was stimulated, in fact, by the pruning. So that's definitely, old habits die hard, but we try to convince people to teach them to change. Don't just eat the fresh fruit, preserve it, make it into flour, new recipes. Mary's a genius at these new recipes to be made with breadfruit flour. Pruning the tree, farmers tend to be risk averse. They're at the mercy of Mother Nature. Is it going to be too rainy? Is it going to be a drought? And so a farmer is usually hesitant to take a risk with something new. So we have to kind of explain, okay, a tree crop is better than a ground crop in many ways. If you have a tree crop, you prune it. How do you fertilize it? Not too heavily. How do you water it? The maintenance is not expensive. It's not high technology, but you do have to care for your tree. Breadfruit takes the least maintenance, but whatever tree, you have to care for it. And so there's a good bit of educating that we try to do.
Are you all familiar with Courtney Mills out of Barbados?
Oh, yes, we know Courtney. We know Courtney when she was first starting, yes. And she is making the most amazing crackers, breadfruit crackers. Now, you talk about a value-added product. They are sophisticated. They could be on the finest restaurants in the world. They are so good. And it's not just Courtney that's doing it. In Puerto Rico, they have a company making breadfruit flour. They're now on U.S. supermarket shelves. In the Dominican Republic. And you know, in the Dominican Republic, people never ate breadfruit. Never. Well, I wouldn't say never, but it wasn't something that they commonly ate. It was used as animal feed or just wasted. Well, a woman from Puerto Rico, she went to the Dominican Republic, and she had an idea to make breadfruit tostones. And that's kind of a fried, mashed breadfruit. And she approached a large food processor called Goya, and now she sells huge container loads of breadfruit tostones to Goya, and they sell them in the United States. I buy them in my supermarket in the frozen section, and they are just delicious. I serve them as all the appetizers if I'm having a party. They're just incredible. So you have crackers in Barbados, you have flour in Puerto Rico. There's a company in Puerto Rico that makes gluten-free bread. And then there is tostones. So there are many opportunities that that are out there we don't even really think of. There's a restaurant in Barbados called Yellow Meat. And all they do is they roast the breadfruit, cut it in half, scoop out the heart, and they fill it. And the fillings are many different flavors. You can get stewed peas, you can get curry goat. It's a bowl. They don't even have to wash dishes. You get your bowl, your breadfruit, and your spoon, and then you choose your filling. So just the opportunities are there. It's just that breadfruit's so common, we have tended to just ignore it.
So it's just about a little after 10:30. We have to jump into a quick commercial break, but when we get back, I'd like to ask exactly some of the work that you've done, because I know you've done some in Tobago as well. So stay tuned, all listeners. We'll be back shortly.
Are you suffering from thinning hair, receding hairlines, or breakage? Or do you just want healthier, fuller hair? Posh Affair Beauty Products were made just for you, featuring natural ingredients designed to restore health and vitality to your crown. For further information, contact 276-2091 or visit us on Instagram and Facebook at Posh Affair Beauty Products.
Are you tired of the same old boring drive home from work?
Work no further.
Get ready for the ultimate after-work rush with Freedom 106.5 FM's The Overdrive with Davey. Mondays to Fridays from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. Let Davey take you on a thrilling ride of non-stop entertainment and education. He covers the topics of the day, delves into the latest food and lifestyle trends, and brings dynamic guests from exciting professions to share their professional stories and experiences. Take advantage of this energizing and engaging experience. Tune into Freedom 106.5 FM Mondays to Fridays, 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. for The Overdrive. Overdrive with Davey. The ultimate way to end your day with a bang.
The Trade and Investment Convention is here, July 17th to the 19th at the Center of Excellence in Macoya. Whether you're launching a new product, building a brand awareness, or driving traffic to your booth, this is your chance to reach a highly engaged, business-savvy audience with Freedom 106.5 FM, the official media partner for TIC 2025. An exclusive advertising opportunity is now available for TIC exhibitors and partners with up to 50% off regular rates, live mentions on TIC coverage, and digital promotion across our online platforms, plus social media highlights from our booth and creative ad production at no extra cost. Call 329-0393 today to amplify your presence at TIC. Only with Freedom 106.5 FM, the voice of business, the sound of opportunity.
Tune in to Betterments with Old Space. Monday through Thursday, 12 p.m. to 3 p.m. for a program that educates and is solution-based. Space tackles the issues that matter to you, providing a platform to speak your mind and find solutions. That's Betterments with Base, with a focus on education and resolution. This is all about making things better for you. You can reach us via phone and WhatsApp to share your thoughts and find solutions to the issues that matter to you. So if you want to make a difference and have your voice heard, tune into Freedom 106.5 FM and join us for Betterments with Bass Monday through Thursday from 12 p.m. to 3 p.m. Better for you, only on Freedom 106.5 FM, where we believe that your voice matters.
Freedom 106.5 FM is the official media partner for the Trade and Investment Convention 2025 Business Beyond Borders, July 17th to 19th at the Center of Excellence, Macoya. Tune into Freedom 106.5 FM for live radio broadcast of the official opening ceremony and capsule reports from major exhibitors. matters. Follow Freedom 106.5 on Facebook and Instagram for social media updates and highlights. Visit our booth, number 130, next to the food court. Meet our radio personalities, join in fun activities with prizes and giveaways to be won. Don't miss Freedom 106.5 FM at the Trade and Investment Convention 2025. Business beyond borders.
This is The Human Impact on Freedom 106.5 FM. Speak your mind.
And welcome back to Agribusiness Innovations with Mr. Jody White. Welcome back.
Thank you so much. Of course, our phone line 625-2257 or 627-3223. If you want to jump in on the conversation, feel free. You can also WhatsApp us at 306-1065. The Trees That Feed Foundation. So tell us some of the ways. We heard about the dehydrator, but what are some of the other ways that you have worked with different people and groups around the world?
All right, I'll take this. Something we work in about 22 countries in the world. We don't go into a country unless we're invited in. And we are especially proud of the work we've done in Haiti. You know, Haiti is our neighbor. It's our neighbor that the English-speaking Caribbean tends to ignore just because of language barriers and political relationships. But we have been working in Haiti for almost as long as we started. We went in there mainly to plant trees. We've gotten hundreds of thousands of breadfruit trees planted. All of our trees, not all, we try to get all of our trees GPS tracked. So there is an app. If you go to map.treetracker.org, again, you can find this on our website. You can see some of the trees were planted, especially in Haiti. We tend to cluster them in the areas of Haiti with more rainfall. And the purpose is to reforest Haiti, which we know has been terribly deforested, and also to create food. From the trees that we planted, we started to work with small agro-processors. We help them to dry that flour using the sun and to grind it into flour. And then we encourage small bakers in Haiti to start to use that breadfruit flour to make a traditional dish that they eat in Haiti. It's a hard biscuit. It's made with breadfruit flour, coconuts, banana, and molasses. And it's baked in a earthenware oven. It's very traditional in that part of Haiti. So started to use a breadfruit flour to do that. And then we got women vendors, women who were unemployed, had trouble feeding their children, educating their children. So we encouraged those women and we gave them a little boost of free product to start to go out and become vendors. Those women used this product to help to increase their income of their families. And that's one of our proudest achievements in Haiti. The other Caribbean countries have natural entrepreneurs. Sometimes they just need to hear an idea, maybe a little boost, and they can run with it. But in Haiti, there is such dire poverty, no government help, that we are so proud of what these women have done. We've kept statistics because we know we have to be evidence-based. We can't just say we're doing this and feel good about it. If we can't prove that these trees have improved people's lives, why are we doing this? And we are so proud of seeing these women whose lives have been improved by selling these breadfruit products that then go all the way back to the farmer and the environment.
I have one question, and maybe I could have asked this from the start. By any chance, do you know why a breadfruit is known as a breadfruit?
Well, you think about it. It's a fruit that's like a bread. Most fruit is not like a bread. Most fruit is for dessert, not like your bread kind. And I think, you know, different countries call it different things. In the Pacific, they call it ulu. That's what it's called all over the Pacific, ulu. Then when those fruit trees came to the Caribbean and people started to eat them and they thought, wow, this tastes like bread. What are we going to call it? And I think that's how it evolved. Now, I'm not sure, but that's my hypothesis.
I very much think that that could work. What about Tobago? Now, I know you did some work with Tobago. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, this is Mike. I'll jump in because I was directly involved. This was a 2023 And the government, one of the bodies of the government, created the Tobago Breadfruit Initiative. I think that has more recently been absorbed into another larger reforestation initiative. But there was a gentleman named Barry Lovelace, there's another gentleman named Deedon Daniel, and they were leaders of the group. And what they have done, a couple of things. We provided, I believe it was 1,000 trees, small seedlings, we were able to ship them in. They were planted out. One of our board members actually visited the location at their agricultural station in Tobago, took a tour, saw the trees doing very well. They were also experimenting with propagation of breadfruit trees. That's another whole subject, and we can come back to that. So we're very pleased with the way Tobago has progressed. We keep nagging them for more recent pictures. Every time we get pictures, they look pretty good. We don't know exactly where those trees are just yet, so we're in the process of trying to get those geotagged and mapped so we know where they all are, that we can monitor them. The monitoring, by the way, that's another whole subject. That's one of the reasons we're successful, is that when we donate trees, we tell the farmer or the individual, we're going to monitor you, track where it is, and we're going to check upon you and give you advice, not to be like Big Brother, but because people know that we care, they tend to take better care of the trees. Back to Tobago, we're very pleased with the initiative there. Trinidad, you know, the island, also has a lot of activity relative to breadfruit. So I think we previously mentioned the UWI and Dr. Robertson Kruma. She's done some significant research into breadfruit and its properties. There was a conference in Trinidad, I think that was back in 2015. So it sounds like long ago, but it was quite a landmark conference in terms of the research that she and her students and the UWI in general, and the world for that matter, had done into breadfruit. We, Trees That Feed, we don't do that type of academic research, but we certainly appreciate it. We're on the practical side, the operational side. Also in Trinidad, I think Mary already mentioned, they have a test plot. One of the things that we learned partly from Trinidad, so we have people, but people help us, is that breadfruit is sensitive to the type of soil. So you don't want a clay type soil for your breadfruit. It thrives much better in a light, loose, sandy loam or even sandy type of soil. So that's one of the things that we learned partly from our experience in Trinidad. And so there's a lot of activity going there. There's a gentleman who I must mention, his name is Raul Bermudez. He's been propagating trees, distributing them, I think, out of his own pocket, frankly, to many people. So he's a name that's very worthwhile remembering if you're in Trinidad. And then last but not least, we learned a lot from the tree propagation being done at Trinidad's Reunion Agricultural Station. We had a tour there some years back, and they're doing a terrific job in propagating breadfruit trees from the stems. We learned a lot from them. We've taken what we've learned there and extrapolated and expanded on it, so now we can deliver 30 to 50,000 trees per year. That's how we're building up the count, building up the success that we've had. A lot that we learned from Trinidad. Each country is different. Haiti, they really need a lot of help. Trinidad and Jamaica, not as much help, but maybe more on the education and popularization, making breadfruit more popular, more respected as a valuable food source.
So you touched on it just now, but how do you say you propagate all these plants for when you have to distribute them? Is it that you have your own area that you do it in, or you work with people?
We try to develop that in each country. And so this will sound obvious, but breadfruit does not have any seeds. So you can't just take a seed and plant it. And for many fruit trees, if you plant a seed, it doesn't work very well. So you have to propagate breadfruit through different methods. Some people would graft the trees onto a breadnut. We kind of don't like that idea too much because you might end up with a breadnut tree. And a lot of people in the Caribbean don't like the nuts, the breadnut fruit. There's three main ways that we recommend to propagate. One is through propagating from the roots. You can either just superficially damage the root of a breadfruit tree that's near the surface, and a little pup will spring up. And so that technique can be expanded. You can actually get a small branch, and do air layering. It's sometimes called marcotting. And then you get a new breadfruit tree from that little twig. And then the third way, the high technology way, is called tissue culture, where you take the growing cells at the tip of the branch, divide that up, culture it in a medium. It's almost like a secret formula, like, you know, we don't know the ingredients of the medium, but then from each little snippet of stem cells, basically, you get another breadfruit tree. That's how we started. We still do that. It's a little expensive. And we train people to do the root culture and the stem culture. And so that's how a country, you know, the island nations in the Caribbean, most of them are importing 75-80% of their food. When they have fertile soil, for the most part, rainfall, for the most part, sunshine, for the most part, a year-round growing season, the islands are starting to realize, Barbados is one of the leaders in this, by the way, of the need for self-sufficiency in a country growing its own food. One way to do that is to be able to propagate your own trees and maximize the economic value as well as the environmental value of each tree.
I want to jump in and just follow up what Mike is saying. In Haiti, the World Food Program used to bring in imported food from the United States and Europe. So they would bring in excess corn, excess wheat, and feed the Haitian people with that. The World Food Program and the United Nations decided they wanted to do things differently. They wanted to support local farmers. So we got in touch with them, or they got in touch with us, and we said to them, come with us to Jamaica. We'll take you to Jamaica and show you what breadfruit can do. They have now gone back to Haiti, and last year, the World Food Program and their affiliates bought 15 tons of breadfruit flour from Haitian entrepreneurs. This year, they have exceeded that. They use that breadfruit flour to make breadfruit dumplings, and they make that with a bean stew, and that's how they feed school children in Haiti. So that's the kind of influence that we feel that we do. We're almost like a lobbying organization for breadfruit to expand it around the world. Those children growing up eating breadfruit dumplings, what do you think they want to do to feed their children in the future? They're not going to be using imported wheat. They will know the value of those trees growing in their country.
That's actually spectacular. One of the issues that, I mean, I am an agro-processor. One of the issues was the peeling of the fruit and why we chose other crops to process. It was just faster and easier. Mm-hmm. Are you aware of any mechanized ways of peeling breadfruit to scale?
Yes, there are a couple of ways. They're all adaptations of like melon peelers, and they're usually all made in China. And we have seen some tend to gum up because, you know, the breadfruit skin has that latex on it. So that could be a problem. We have seen, even in Jamaica, in big processes, we have seen them using just industrial, like potato peelers, and doing that. And that can be done very quickly. In Haiti, we went to a facility, and what they did was they had an electric drill and a rotisserie spinner. So the breadfruit was spinning, and they had a knife at the end of a drill, like it was not a straight knife, like a cross knife. And they just held that knife on the drill beside the breadfruit. And as the breadfruit spun, it peeled it. But, you know, I don't see anything wrong with breadfruit skin. And I have tasted breadfruit flour made with the breadfruit skin, and I have liked it just as much as the breadfruit flour that's made without the skin. So I'd encourage people to wash it carefully. Make sure you wash it carefully. But try it with the skin and try it without the skin. It's your personal preference.
Wait, other than the flour, are there dishes that people could use the skin for?
Well, I have seen in Puerto Rico and in Uganda where they have peeled the breadfruit and that skin they've fried in oil and used like a chip, put salt on it and some pepper on it. And the people who have tried it seem to be really enjoying it. I haven't tried it, but I have seen that.
Mary, I am going to do that before the end of this week and I will tag you on LinkedIn with the result.
Okay, all right. You see, this is innovation. People don't think of innovation because it's risky. And it's, suppose you invest your time and you do it and you don't like it. So what? You may have lost an hour of your time and a little oil and a little salt. But if you have gained, think of the leap that you have gained.
Tosco, I mean, what do you think about that? We're going to take the skin after we peel the breadfruit.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we'll soak it and salt it to soften it up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Brine it a little bit, dry it, and then try to deep fry it.
Absolutely. And, you know, I want to go back to Raul Bermudez. He's your local man. He has taken money out of his own pocket. He goes to a reunion station in Minister of Agriculture. He buys those trees. And he gives them one to backyards. And I think this is a remarkable thing that he is doing. So if you ever want to have somebody fun on your show, think of him.
You know, I wondered if Raul ever got a national award because Raul's efforts in breadfruit are selfless.
I know. And I think he should be recognized.
I think he should be recognized because who wants a breadfruit tree? Come on. I'll give it to you for free. And I'm like, Raul, you're paying for this all the time. So, like, you have to be a national treasure.
Absolutely. And you know what we do in Jamaica? I'm not coming back to us, but when there's a new housing development, there's always a kind of leader in the housing development. Now, they usually have no trees in these new housing developments. So we say, this person get a breadfruit, the one next door get a pear, the other one get a plum, the other one get a mango. And when you have your excess fruit, everybody can share. The breadfruit tree person can give to everybody five houses over breadfruit. The mango person can do the same.
I think we have a phone call. Let's take it quickly.
Good morning. Good morning. And you're talking breadfruit. They have two types of breadfruit. They have the yellow one and they have the white one. You see the yellow one? That's the one we just use in Trinidad. So, good morning, Tosca. And good morning to this radio station. We're talking agriculture, and I call him from Barfo. We agriculture area, right? So, what about the people who that keep with crops and things?
Caller, thank you very much for your contribution. Of course, Pridia Lasni, we did have that as a topic before, but I'm sure we will bring that around. And Mike and Mary, how many breadfruit varieties are there in the entire world and a ballpark?
Ballpark is 100. Okay, and so we've worked with the National Tropical Botanical Garden in Hawaii. That's the first trip that Mary took to get us started here. And they've done a lot of research, and they have a collection of breadfruit trees of different varieties. There was a researcher named Diane Ragone. She's a semi-retired right now, but she was a tireless worker. She traveled all over the Pacific and collected samples of most of the approximately 100 varieties that are known. There's a couple of... They have some slightly different origins in terms of how recently they came from Papua New Guinea and other parts of the Pacific. She and other researchers are more expert than we are in terms of the derivation of the and the development of the different varieties. But they do fall into a couple of different families. The caller mentioned yellow and white. And there's a lot more than two classifications. Many of the favorite varieties in the Caribbean are yellow in color. There's a yellow meat, there's a yellow heart. The Mafala is a yellow variety. And personally, I can tell you, roasted, it is the most delicious that I've ever tasted. And all the people in St. Vincent are going to call and tell me I'm wrong because they have some wonderful varieties there in St. Vincent. But that's a classification. The trees are genetically relatively similar. Some fruit are larger, some are smaller, some have more color, some have less color. They're all good eating fruit. The white variety in Jamaica has a little bit different texture, so you can tell from the texture as well as the color. They're all good, but there's 100 varieties. St. Vincent, we think, may have the most in the Caribbean. They had about 15 varieties that were brought there by Captain Bligh in 1793. Jamaica had about five. We've introduced five more, so Jamaica has about 10 or 11 varieties. The answer is, you know, if you find a tree that has a good fruit, then enjoy that, propagate that tree, get more of that type of fruit. They're all they're similar, and yet they're different.
To my listeners there, I want to give you a little bit of a health tip. If you have breadfruit, it's in season now, roast it whole. Slice it up into very thin slices. Give it a light coating of some sort of an oil, like maybe a coconut oil, and put it to freeze. And whenever you're having breakfast, instead of having bread, put it in the air fryer, sprinkle a little salt on it, and air fry it for 10-15 minutes. It comes out like a cracker, and it is a flavorful, in-depth, I want to say exotic thing to add to your breakfast, especially if you're having something like eggs and a tuna. That's exactly what I do when things are in season. I try to find a way to store it. And Mike, you know, Mary, there is a small processor in Trinidad who we had on the show last year. He has a very small freeze dryer. And he's actually freeze-drying breadfruit and exporting it in very small volumes to people in the States, people in England, where they just have to rehydrate it and cook it. So that's quite interesting.
Yes, that's a good way to preserve. Freezing is a good way. We're very conscious of cost. And so there's a lot of folks that are in rural parts of the country. You know, Haiti, don't suggest freezing in Haiti. They don't have a good enough electricity supply. So we do dehydration, but there's very successful businesses in Jamaica and elsewhere where they're freeze-drying or freezing and packaging for retail sale. And it's a very successful business. And so breadfruit is not just good for eating, but it's tremendous in terms of its economic potential. So that's another whole subject, but a farmer can make a whole living off of breadfruit. One quick story, I know we're close to the end of our time, but we donated 50 trees to a farmer in Jamaica early on when we first got started, back about 2010. And a few years later, we visited him and he had planted all the trees. Everyone was alive. His land was a hillside, gently sloping, so you could stand on the road and you could see just about all the 50 trees. We're talking to him, his name is Farmer Baugh. And we said, Mr. Baugh, how are you doing with your trees? And he waves his hand and he shows us the expanse of trees that he has planted behind us. And he says, that is my pension. That is my pension. So the buyers come every Tuesday and Thursday during bearing season, and they pick and they pay him cash on the spot. And that keeps this gentleman going.
That is very much brilliant. Mike and Mary, out of the Trees That Feed Foundation, us at Freedom 106.5 FM, we thank you for joining us. You took the time out today. You gave us a lot of information. I hope that you've also inspired some people to get involved with that fruit. For those persons who want to know more about the foundation, it is treesthatfeed.org. There is a wealth of information. Whether you are a hobbyist interested in food security or a company, look for their website. There's a lot of information there, and there's also contact information. Any closing remarks, Mike and Mary?
Thank you. You've given us the exposure we would like, so we appreciate it and we're grateful to you.
Anybody wants to reach out to us, we will answer, we will reply.
Thank you very much, folks. Agribusiness Innovation, Freedom 106.5 FM. This has been Jody White. Tune in next week for another edition of this show. Stay safe.